Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, wherever you are. Thank you for joining us for our discussion titled Improving SOC Efficiencies. Co-hosting with us today is Nozomi Network's Chief Product Officer and co-founder, Andrea Carcano.
Hi, everyone. Hello, Chris. Great to be here.
Thank you. And myself, Chris Grove, technology evangelist here at Nozomi Networks. Today's session will cover some of the challenges Security Operations Center designers and operators face and the sources of those challenges. Next, we'll discuss ways to leverage a few features within Nozomi Networks Guardian that streamlines deployment, monitoring, and sustainment, all resulting in more efficient operations. Then, we'll wrap up with some recommendations and Q&A. Please feel free to ask questions in the GoToWebinar questions panel, and we'll try to answer live, but we might need to come back to you after today's session. And finally, we'll provide some useful links and further reading for more information on this topic. So without further ado, let's jump right in. Andrea, like myself, you have a lot of experience and even some scars from sleeping under desks and working 24/7 in a SOC. So tell us a little bit about that fun and some of those scars.
Yeah, that's absolutely true, Chris. As we mentioned in the past, you know, part of my background, especially, you know, before founding Nozomi Networks, was I worked in a SOC for 3 years, and yeah, I have exactly some of that fun experience. So and the funny things of working in a SOC is that you know, no one is really noticing you until something happened. So, and when something happened, you know, you need to be ready and try to, you know, to fix what exactly is happening. So it happens sometimes that, you know, I get a call in the middle of the night and because an incident was identified and I have to literally go back to the office at 2 a.m. And I may left the office after 2 days. so without going back and you know, in other cases where I found me and other guys from the SOC eating you know, a pizza in front of a monitor trying to, you know, solve a problem or understand or even, you know, try to protect the company during a real cyber attack. So yeah, a lot of that story that you know, I have to tell. And also, just to add one more thing, a lot of that experience that I lived by spending time in a SOC, right? We try also, when we founded Nozomi, we tried to use that experience in order to create a product that is making the life of the people that are living in a SOC a little bit easier. Mm-hmm.
Right, and that's what I think we're going to cover today is a couple of those pretty cool things. And basically what we just discussed about some of those challenges and some of the cool stuff that you've done in the past, as well as myself. I want to mention one thing that I thought was pretty cool is taking like the idea of a SOC and making a war room. I've had the opportunity to do that twice, where we build a SOC, monitor an event, and run through the entire life cycle of a security operations center, but over the course of 8 days with 24/7 monitoring and coordination across 1,500 federal agencies and law enforcement, and just bringing it all together really fast, like Olympic style, and then getting through it all. So hopefully we'll be able to draw on both of our experience here and share some valuable information with some of the folks out there listening today. So
yeah,
some of the things that I've learned about SOCs are that the people that spend a lot of time in there, like, they're superheroes. I mean, these guys are doing triage on a daily basis of, typical SOCs can see like 10,000 alerts a day. And that's just a lot of information to have to go through. And these guys are on the front lines and in the trenches of these events. They have to know a huge amount of information in order to resolve these tickets. And the kind of information they have to know is about the business, how it works, how all the machinery works, what the business operations look like, what the computing systems do, what are the weaknesses, where are the risks, and how to handle like tickets and problems. When somebody has an alert on something or somebody has a problem, they're having to do things like R&D, manage tickets, update knowledge bases, work with security information event managers and orchestration, logging, keeping up to date with all the hacking trends and all the threats out there. I mean, these guys to me are true superheroes. The amount of information that they have to have and the dark like art that they have to operate in order to keep these attackers back is just a massive amount of information and constant learning. And it's quite a challenge. I mean, what have you seen in terms of the science and the superheroes?
Absolutely. I think what you're saying, Chris, is super true, right? And one of the things that I found very interesting when I was part of a SOC is exactly what you were mentioning, right? It was the fact that you have to do a very methodic job, right? You need to be very precise. You have lots of information. So, and everyone is connecting a SOC as the Security Operations Center are the group of people that are going to help me when we are under attack, which is true, right? It's absolutely true. But thankfully, that is not always the case, right? And when you are in a SOC in your day by day, so what really matters is methodology, is be very precise because you receive tons of information and you need to be very smart and capable with the right instruments to identify when there is something that is. Can be really an incident, or something can, be something that is not that relevant, and yeah, you need to process many of those events, right? So that is one things that for me, one things that I learned when I was there in the SOC, the importance to have the right tools and important to also having tool helping you to quickly consume better the information that you have, right? Because very quickly. In a SOC, if you start to have too much information, if you start to have too many alerts, very quickly it's almost like not having all that information because too much information means almost no information. So it's a very delicate job that requires a lots of methodology and the right tooling.
Exactly. And just getting through all those alerts is tough. And all those events, I mean, not just alerts, but it's people calling up saying, hey, something's wrong with my printer or my phone, and I think I've been hacked. How many times do people get that phone call? And it turns out they, just have their Wi-Fi off or something. So getting through all that noise and trying to get to the real events, and then understanding what to do, who to call, how to mitigate that, how to do triage on that. That's to me a very important science. And that's basically what they do on a day-to-day basis. And the volume is just astronomical in terms of how much information is flowing through today's enterprise SOC. And just as I mentioned a moment ago, 10,000 alerts per day is what a typical enterprise SOC will see. And more than there's some surveys that have been done out there, and the alert fatigue is the number one thing out there that is the challenge that SOC operators are facing right now, is getting through all of that noise. And more than 70% of SOC analysts investigate more than 10 alerts per day, and more than 80% of SOC analysts spend 10 minutes or more on each of those alerts. So you can imagine it's literally like triage in an emergency room, and just getting through all of the stuff as quick as you can in order to get to the most important things out there is really the challenge. And the result in the end, unfortunately, is there's a lot of burnout in SOCs. People tend to move on to some other things, and half of the security operations centers that have been surveyed out there have a turnover rate of up to 25%, and that's pretty high. So there's multiple things that that we're challenged with here to overcome. And I've done quite a bit of training in SOCs over the years, and they tend to buy training for products over and over again because of the turnover and the transition of people to other roles. Once they get up to speed on everything, they tend to advance pretty quickly in the organization if they don't burn out. And there's a lot of replacement and retraining that's done at those layers. So that's something to consider if, is the educational aspect of it and the amount of information required to get through all this stuff.
On this topic, I completely agree with you, Chris. I think the education part and the capability to to put together the information is fundamental. And I remember, right, some of the real story about monitoring and events. And again, you'll keep hearing me talking a lot about, you know, having the right tools, because for me it was really a pain, right? Or a pain or you know, something that I noticed deeply when I was there in the SOC. And I remember, you know, once I think we received an event, there was this specific event that we classify as not very important. You know, there was an anomaly. We catch someone, you know, that was basically moving one file from one position to another. Now, let me try to tell the story without reveal any details, of course. But you know, there was a sequence of events that happened over 10 days. And all events were identified as not correlated to each other. But the capability, you know, that we had at that time to start to manually, you know, correlate that information and start thinking, okay, but I remember that, you know, 1 week ago happened, you know, these specific things, and I cannot share too many details here, but anyway, so I clearly remember, as you mentioned, the importance to also have the ability and the skills and the education to actually be capable to say, okay, if I put together all this entire alert in between, you know, 1,000 or 10,000 alerts a day, right? You start to select and connect the dots, and basically we're able to identify a very deep attack, a very well organized. Yeah, at the end was great. It was a great successful success, but yeah, it was not obvious. Let me say.
Yeah, yeah, that's sometimes the difficulty is finding a needle in a haystack. And,
oh yeah.
The only way to do that is to put a haystack down. You can't find a needle in a haystack if the barn is empty. So you sort of need to create the haystack to have the needle to look for, in a way. Once you find that needle, then all of a sudden the rest of the stack makes a lot of sense, and you can start to correlate across different things. I mean, you might have to have some Windows expertise, Linux expertise, Rockwell, Cisco, Siemens, and maybe a few other things in order to piece together that attack. And so if we look at or think about where these alerts come from, there's so many different sources and so many different types of alerts that a SOC has. I mean, how do you even get to 10,000 alerts a day? It's not one product that's generating that. It's a sea of products. I mean, you can imagine everything on the IT side has the potential to send out some kind of a message or an alert to a SOC. And in fact, it's even a regulatory requirement in many of today's drivers. And if we think about the different types of alerts that someone may get in a SOC, one type would be that something exists. You know, if we have a network that is supposed to be doing a very specific thing, and now we have something there that we don't know about. Like if we have a network of printers and then all of a sudden we have a robot, that doesn't make any sense. So we should get an alert about something that exists that doesn't belong there. And that's one type of an anomaly detection alert. Another one could be the characteristics of that thing that exists. A characteristic could be the firmware or the configuration of something, how it looks, what type of device it is, and so forth. Then also another type or source of an alert could be the behavior of that object in the enterprise. Is this thing receiving incoming connections from other devices? Or is it being treated as a client or a server? Or is it a source of traffic going to other devices? And then what does that traffic look like? What kind of a protocol is it? What does that payload look like? Is the payload being used the right way? So there's a lot of different layers of behaviors that we can mention and raise alerts on. And then finally, one additional part, but not probably the last one, is signature type attacks. So if we see something like a end quote, end parenthesis, single quote, end parenthesis, or 1=1... we know that that's a SQL injection attack. Doesn't occur naturally in programming. We can always identify that as that, and it doesn't matter what the configuration or the existence or the behavior of that device is. We know that's ransomware or that's a particular type of an attack. So there's lots of different ways that we can generate alerts in the enterprise, and those alerts can come from many different places. Hardware comes with capability to generate alerts, like CPUs and motherboards can have temperature sensors and power things going on, and servers can alert if somebody logs in or fails a login or if a process executes, or if an application runs a particular way, you can have access control technology in there that will generate alerts as well. And then networks generate alerts, things like switches and routers and monitoring products that monitor those networks can also generate alerts, your intrusion detection systems and firewalls, and pretty much everything that's in there can generate an alert of some sort that might have use in a SOC. And Andrea, how many times have we seen over the years the typical modus operandi of a lot of deployments is, I don't know what we need, but the SOC will handle it. So let's just turn all this stuff on and let's just put all the alerts over there and then they'll figure out what to do with them. It's
very common. that's very common. And I think was common, when I was working in a SOC, but now also with Nozomi, of course, you know, our ultimate goal is helping different parts of the organization, but also helping it be one of the key components inside the SOC, right? And I think we see exactly the type of story happening, and that's why, you know, we're investing a lot of effort to make sure that even in a situation like that, even in a situation where, you know, there is some context missing, you know, from one group to another, and then you are in a SOC and you receive an alert of a system or a project that you may not even put in place. So that's why is fundamental for us and in general to provide context and extra information, and to provide also one of the things that I always ask to myself is this information and alert that we are raising providing all the information that I needed for a person that doesn't know anything about where, you know, the sensor is installed and where this alert is coming from. So, and that's, I think, is a challenge. And to be honest, when I was, you know, now let me talk about my previous life before Nozomi, but when I was working a SOC, we had lots of tools, right? You know, many different solutions. Not everyone was very good at that. You know, some of them were just raising an alert, and then you were there in a SOC and saying, okay, what I have to do now? So, you know, there was just a lack of information. And there was a lot of work just, you know, around that single alert to actually surround yourself with the right information and start to understand better the context. So that's, you know, it's absolutely, you know, a fundamental topic, let me say.
Yes, yeah, I totally agree. And also, you know, for compliance, when people have to deal with that, it's sometimes safer if you're in the trenches rolling out the product, it's safer to send more than the compliance team needs than less, because you'll pass more checkboxes and getting reports signed off without as many issues if you have enough data in the SOC to satisfy all those. So it's common to just push as much as you can and let them deal with it. Unfortunately, mm-hmm. feel bad for them sometimes because it becomes a dumping ground for data in some ways, and getting through all that noise. And then when you get into what I call the creme de la creme, which is the final frontier of like anomaly detection, and that's looking in the payload of that traffic. You know, it's simple to look at the network and say, okay, this guy talked to that guy and that's sort of strange. But then what about when someone talks to someone else on a normal basis and they always communicate with each other? Let's look inside of that communications channel and let's look at how that data is being used. For example, are they setting the RPMs of a turbine beyond the capability of the turbine? If they always set it to 44 RPMs or 100 RPMs and somewhere in that range, and then today it goes off the charts, that could be an alert that lands in a SOC. And how does that SOC operator know that that end piece of equipment is out of the bounds of that? Does he know that that's okay?
Yeah.
So you get the IT side down, there's a whole nother frontier of information to discover and do anomalies and alerting on. And it can get very, very complex and require a tremendous amount of information.
Yeah, I agree with you, Chris. And this example, you know, reminds me, again, some of the stuff that I see on the field, right? Right now, you know, Nozomi is utilized in, you know, in, for example, the major oil and gas company in the world, you know, are using the Nozomi tools to try to identify this type of attacks, and the same for pharmaceutical and many other vertical. And one of the things that we notice in the process of selection is that at some point, especially when the market was not as mature as today, but it's still happening right now. You have, you know, eventually some of the potential customers that are saying, okay, let me try to see different tools and let me test that in a laboratory. And now I want to see if I you know, generate a new packets or if I ask a specific information to one device in a different way, I want to see the solution able to identify that. Okay, fantastic. And in the context of a laboratory, you have, you know, a few data points, it's easy. And now you are testing the very, very minimum of the capability. But what really makes the difference is that is exactly the situation that you described. You get an alert, and one thing is getting an alert saying, oh, there is a value that we never seen about you know, the speed of a turbine. Okay, great. But now I'm sitting in a SOC. I don't know anything about that turbine. It's not my duty to know anything about that turbine. And I barely know how the entire process works. What I know is that I'm a cybersecurity expert. So of course, fundamental to have a, you know, a direct connection with the people on the field and having a right organization there, which is absolutely important. But on the other side, what makes the difference is the capability of our tools to complement that information and give you all that information. It's not just a new value from a pump, you know, from a pump speed or a turbine speed, but we're talking about that is a new value. And this value is operating outside from the standard capability of that turbine. So if you can just add a little extra piece of information, you can clearly understand that now I'm sitting on a SOC, you know, 1,000 miles away from maybe that plant, but now I have an extra piece and saying, okay, that's not just a new value. That's a new value that, you know, is operating in a way that is potentially dangerous. So now you are acting your trigger the standard process of reacting of this one with more confidence, right? Because now you know that there is something that is wrong. So that's why what you describe is absolutely fundamental.
Right. And it, to think about the complexity of that, what you just described is in the context of a single instance. Now think about a plant that has thousands of switches, tens of thousands of pieces of equipment in it, and then scale that out across hundreds of plants. And you can start to see how complex and big this can be, this challenge. And I thought we could do a quick drill here and walk through some numbers and talk about how a product gets deployed and then what kind of alerts come out of that. And then some of the technologies that you touched on earlier, what the impact of those could be on that kind of a thing. So if we think about a typical deployment, we would have the initial deployment first, and there's usually like a learning or a tuning or, you know, a setup period where somebody, sometimes it's called a POC, sometimes it's just an initial deployment or pilot. And then once the product is sort of situated and connected up to the SOC, then the next step is to expand it out across the rest of the plant. And then scale that across all the plants, or even if within one plant, if it's large enough, or one office or one anything out there, a company, and then investigate an incident after you've done the scale out. And that's like a really typical life cycle of your average deployment of just about anything out there, from Nozomi to an IDS solution and so forth. So let's take the first step of the initial deployment and kind of mentally walk through that. Let's say that it has five different devices that we want to deploy. It's going to be like a camera and a robot and whatever, five different things. Each one does five things. So that's five characteristics each. And then there's 10 cyber attacks already happening on that network, maybe a couple pieces of malware and, you know, something else going on. So when you deploy a product and you're starting to do a tuning, there's a couple different approaches. The first one is to turn off the monitoring, not monitor anything, and just kind of learn and develop an asset inventory and get a baseline of what the traffic looks like, and then try to do alerting later.
Yeah.
And I think that's a bad approach, and I'll talk about that later. Why? The next approach is going to be to try to do some alerting on that environment, develop the asset inventory, and chafe through and sort through all the false positives later. So that approach would give us five alerts, one each for the unknown device. Then each device is going to do five things. So that would be 25 anomalies that we would get. So that's now 30 alerts so far. Then we have our 10 cyber attacks. That's a total of 40 alerts. Now, we have this technology in our product called adaptive learning. And what that'll do, why don't you tell us about that, Andrea? Because you're one of the inventors of this. So who better to speak to that than you? Tell us what adaptive learning is about.
Yeah. And I tell you in general, and I let you contextualize on your example, but I think your example was great, right? You have potentially, by applying a standard anomaly detection mechanism, you can potentially have tons of alerts coming down to a SOC in a centralized way, especially when you have a big installation, you're monitoring many plants. So what we are trying to do with our adaptive learning is leveraging on the information that we have about the device that we usually monitor inside the plant. And by leveraging that information, we can, even in the learning phase and during the detection phase later, we can actually identify if there is a behavior that is wrong from the very beginning, right? We are learning, let me make a very basic example. We're learning that there is this PLC that usually work with these three protocols, now working with a protocols that is not even close to what, or we see someone trying to communicate with that PLC with a protocol that it doesn't match at all with that PLC, right? So that's something that we can notice from the very beginning. So, same things, if during the detection phase, we identify something that, or there is a change in your network, and we know that that device usually is behaving in a certain way because, that firmware usually behaving a certain way. And now you do an update in your network and, you have that specific device with a new firmware, for example, and that firmware introduced a difference in the behavior. So now in the 99% of the case, you receive a tons of alerts in specific about the new behavior. But what about if that behavior, it's a completely good behavior. It's not a behavior that is creating an issue, but it's simply something due to the fact that you updated the firmware. So now you need to go and say, okay, no, this is valid, and go through the system, any whatever system it is, and let the system manually learn about that. But what we're trying to do on an Nozomi side, what we are doing on an Nozomi side, is basically providing all this extra information. And even if you update on a new firmware or a specific device that you have in your network, and embedded with that, there is a change in the behavior on that device that is still inside the normal. That is an intelligence that we provide, and we're making sure that we guide the customer not raising an alert, or we advise him that this is a behavior that not very important, because it's part of the update of the firmware. So that's just two examples, just to say that, again, one more time, just do an anomaly-based detection. It's a very cool approach. I spent all my PhD working on anomaly-based detection. That is a fantastic way to identify stuff. But if you just apply anomaly-based detection, you're not going to scale inside a big SOC, especially if you're an enterprise. You need a tool capable to add a lot of extra information on top of the standard anomaly detection if you really want to make the difference.
Exactly. And let's walk through now our deployment scenario. With the technology you just mentioned, we would generate five new asset alerts for the five unknown devices, and we would generate zero anomalous behavior because those five devices, we already know about them. Right? We don't know, they're new to the network, so we would get a new asset for them. But like you mentioned, it's say a Rockwell PLC or a Siemens PLC or something. We can know about the behaviors ahead of time and pre-train the device so it doesn't generate anomalies for completely normal traffic. So in the initial deployment, without our technology, you would end up with the 40 alerts. With this technology, you end up with 15 alerts. Of those 15 alerts, 15 actually are valid. So that's like 100% validity right there, where you have zero false positives mixed in with all of those alerts. So the next thing that somebody would do once they get through the first phase is expand out that deployment a little bit, add to it. And here we're gonna have 10 new known devices added, and each one has 10 characteristics, and we'll have 25 cyber attacks mixed in. So we would get, if we don't have the Nozomi Networks technologies that we mentioned earlier, and we have just the like the old school anomaly detection or different types of products that do that, we would get the 10 new asset alerts again, because obviously everybody can tell you that there's something new on the network. That's pretty easy for most products to do. And then you would get the 100 anomalies, because 10 devices, 10 characteristics each, that'd be the 100 anomalies. And then you would get the 25 cyber attacks for a total of 135 alerts. But with the adaptive learning and asset intelligence in Nozomi, you would get the initial 10 new asset alerts, and then no anomalous behavior alerts, because again, we know about those devices. We know what behavior they're supposed to be doing. So we're not gonna raise things or alerts of things that we've already learned about or things that we already have in the system. So it could be even a device that it's just been added and we would already sort of know how it's supposed to behave. And then again, we would get those 25 cyber attack alerts for 35 alerts. So that's a lot better than the 135 alerts from not having these technologies.
Yep.
Doesn't sound like a big difference yet, right? It's not until you start to scale where you just start to feel this pain. And that's really, I think, where most of the issues lie in a SOC with the scale. Because if you have a false positive, but you only have a couple a day, I think SOCs can handle that. It's when you send 9,000 of the 10,000 alerts are false positives, that's when you have a problem. So let's take our little scenario and scale that out. So we're gonna add now 25 new networks to the solution. Each one is gonna have 100 new devices that we know about. And then each of those devices has 10 characteristics each. And we're gonna have 100 cyber attacks here. So in this situation, we'll have the 2,500 new asset alerts. And that's great because we need to know about these. This will light up the whole entire network for us and let us know we've seen everything. We have a great asset inventory now. But that 25,000 anomalies that's generated, I mean, walk through that math. 100 devices, 25 networks, says 25 times 100, and then 10 characteristics each comes out to 25,000 anomalies across this scale out. That gives you 27,600 alerts compared to 2,600 alerts. And finally, when we move on to the infection cleanup phase, where we've got all this stuff running, we have all these things generating these alerts, and now we have one machine that was infected with malware and decided today to spread to two other devices. So if you recall the earlier on, I mentioned a strategy to not having so many alerts during the rollout phase was to turn off alerting and learn the environment and don't generate alerts during that phase. And I mentioned that's bad practice and it's not the best method. And I'll tell you why. Because if now we have this one malware infected machine that spreads to two other places, but early in the rollout, we turned off the security alerting, then we've actually baselined that first machine's activity as good. And we won't consider that an anomaly, not us and Nozomi. I'm just saying that if you don't have our technology in place and you took the approach of not alerting during the deployment phase, you're gonna end up learning a lot of bad traffic. And when you have an infection that spreads, you might not pick up an alert to that. So you could be generating tens of thousands of false positive alerts for the good stuff, but then the one bad thing that's mixed in with all that, you would miss it because of the way that it was approached during deployment. So it's much better to alert all the way through, research the environment, learn from what you see. It's a little bit more upfront effort, but then you end up with a much better security model later. But fortunately, with Nozomi Networks, Guardian, you don't really need to make that choice because you can have your cake and eat it too with these technologies. Let's walk through the infection scenario. We would get zero new asset alerts because we don't see any new assets. That machine already existed. So that infected machine isn't new. However, we would see 9 anomalous behaviors coming off of that because now we have 3 machines doing malware activities, 3 anomalous connections each. We would have a total of 9 alerts. That's a 100% success rate on the alerting, 0% false positive rate. If just for review, the initial deployment, we would have done 15 alerts and then expansion 35 alerts, and then at scale 2600 alerts. Without our technology of those two pieces that we talked about, the other solutions would give you 40 alerts in the initial deployment, 135 alerts during the expansion, and then 27,600 alerts during the scale. And that comes down to an amazing 90% reduction in alerts.
Yeah, I think that's the example that you ran, Chris, is fantastic, because as I mentioned at the very beginning when you were discussing, I think, you know, living in a SOC is not an easy life. And really, one of the main challenges that you have is not just identify what is bad, but, you know, be sure that you focus your attention in what is really bad. And when you run a project for selecting a new cybersecurity technology, everyone is more focused on, oh, let me make sure that these technologies identify every single thing that is different, which is great from one side. It's a test that is good to do, but you never. So when I'm in front of one of our customers, I always tell them, you know, remember that, you know, this technology need to scale up. Remember that you are going not to monitor just a laboratory, but you need to basically be scalable and having your team that is doing the operation side be able to really, you know, monitor and really be effective by receiving all of that alerts. That's why we're very proud about, you know, what we did. And, you know, and I want to say that it's just the beginning, because we did a lot of work, right? But we never stop in improving on that part. We never stop in believing that that is our mission. And that's what we want to do as a company and as a technology. So, and we have a few ideas also to make this technology even better. But that's is a you know, my big personal, let me say, recommendation for every person, individual, companies that is out there and saying, oh, anomaly detection, I love it. Let me try to add in my company. And this is great, but just make sure that technology is capable and is able to scale with you. And when you are monitoring 100 of your plants, is able to give you exactly the information that are important.
Exactly. And even if it's not the size of the company or the organization, sometimes it's just like in IoT, we get a lot of devices sometimes. Yep, so this needs to be considered, even if it's just one plant, but it has a bunch of devices. And I've seen companies try to monitor just one thing before and not be able to handle the alerts. I mean, not with Nozomi, but with other products. And it doesn't even take a massive amount of scale to have an overwhelming amount of information coming in. And yeah, I definitely, the evidence is in the product today, as well as what we have coming out on this front, that we've taken this very seriously. And we definitely excel in the space when it comes to integration and enabling a SOC. And yeah, so you already gave a couple of good recommendations there. I think we have a couple more. Do you want to walk through some, or do you want me to kick some off?
I think you can start, Chris, and I will add a few comments about that recommendation. I think I gave already one that is very important, but I'll let you walk some of the others, and happy to chime in.
Yeah, so I think one of the things that you just hit on was key, which is, you know, take advantage of technologies that reduce alert noise. You know, it's one thing to just say, yeah, we can tell you if this happens, but you have to be able to get through when it happens and it's okay. So there needs to be mechanisms for tuning and ways to learn the environment without generating noise, and do it in a way that makes things more secure than when you started, and it's not just being done for the sake of the product per se. And then having well-established communications plans, knowing who to call and when, know who's the expert on the turbine, who's the expert on the air conditioning system, and who's the expert on the servers and workstations. Because if you have a problem between two of those things, you're gonna maybe need to call both and get them on the same phone call and work through an issue. So communications plans are key, and having, you know, some playbooks established as well behind that is also key. When you start getting into scale, one of the most important things is going to be automation and integration with other stuff. Change management. You know, if you're a ServiceNow company, then integrating Nozomi with ServiceNow is going to take you a long way. SIM products, getting all this information into the SOC and organized, and so you can correlate across the events that come in from a variety of products. So make sure that you choose things that integrate with the SIMs that you'll have in your SOC. And earlier we also mentioned a couple of challenges: burnout and turnover, and the training and the knowledge. So when you're selecting products for the enterprise, make sure they have well-established professional communities and certification programs. Because right now you can go and do a search out there for Nozomi certified people, and they're out there. You can find them, you can bring them in, and they're experts. They work for partners, they work for us, they work for our customers. I mean, I doubt that many of them are looking for work today, but I'm sure there are a few. There is a definite need to have a certification type program out there with so many different products in the enterprise, so that you know you're getting a base skill set with somebody that comes in, they understand the technology, and they'll focus their time on learning the business and the enterprise and filling in all that information rather than learning the product that you need them to run. So that's always good to have that. And then also, I mentioned earlier not to disable the security alerting during the learning and during the setup and things, just because the amount of information that you'll learn and the security stuff that you'll find, you can't sweep it under the carpet at that early stage. You can't put it into the baseline. It's not a good approach. So keeping your eyes open, keeping an open mind, looking at all of the alerts, looking at all the information coming out of the systems, and in the beginning, you're going to probably learn a lot more, and then that knowledge will be useful moving forward. So, you know, the learning period in the beginning is kind of important. So I would say pay extra attention during that early phase of deployment. And also, there's another technology that we have that we'll just briefly mention really quick, which is our learning that our security profiles. After you've done the learning and you're going through these alerts that are not false positives, you have to have some priority over the what you tackle first. So being able to divide and conquer and bite off manageable chunks, learn about an environment like in smaller portions or in zones. Don't try to plug it in and do everything at the same time. Try to bite off manageable chunks so that when you do get extra alerts, you do have the extra manpower and resources to research them and get into the nitty-gritty of everything. And go ahead, please, Andre.
No, please finish, Chris. I will add something at the end, but I was just completely, you know, on the same page with all your recommendation.
Yep, and I was just gonna say, finally, keep your head high, because I think that this is a fun role, and being in a security operations center, you are literally a superhero in the company. It is your job to keep the lights on and to keep everyone safe from all of the bad things that are outside trying to come in. So this is adventure type work here, and these are your tools of your adventure. And if you're like me, then this is fun stuff. And if you love it, then you'll never actually work a day in your life. And being in a SOC is one of the coolest places to be in any company, in my opinion. So Andrea, please throw something on top.
I mean, that's a fantastic conclusion, Chris. I agree with you. So it's people that work in a SOC are a real superhero. And as we say, we both of us spend a good amount of time working in a SOC. And so that is absolutely, I find myself absolutely in agreement on what you said. And I just want to add, you know, one more time that make sure when you try to identify which is the right tools that you ask to yourself, is it 2 a.m. in the morning and I get an alert and there is someone working overnight, eventually that they have to decide is calling me or not because I'm responsible. And is that tools providing the right information? So, you know, between us, multiple times I get a call from, you know, one of my guys that were there overnight and saying, hey, we have a problem. And then I spend 2 hours from 3 a.m. to 4 a.m. For a drill down in what's happening, and then ended out to be nothing. So, and again, that's just part of the life of a SOC. So not complaining, but I think a tool that is helping you can make the right difference there. So,
yeah. You know, it's in a way, if you think about the SOC, is it's a company's first responders, right? They're the guys that when the fire happens, they're the ones that suit up, put on the fire engine and race to the scene. That's still racing to the scene and fun. So even though it may not be anything at all, the whole adventure of getting there sometimes is an adventure.
Yeah.
Yeah. So with that, I believe that we have one final piece of information to offer the community here is for further reading. If you come to our website, you'll be able to find this this session and also a bunch of further reading and some resources that would be helpful. First, we have an executive brief called Integrating OT into IT-OT SOCs. That's meant for the C-level and very high-level useful information, chock full in there. Then we have a blog about making the case for the IT-OT SOC. We have an on-demand webinar, Trends in OT Cybersecurity, IT-OT Convergence is here to stay. We also have a white paper, Advancing ICS Visibility and Cybersecurity with the Nozomi Networks Solution. And I'd like to remind the audience to please register for our next webinar on Thursday, August the 6th. That one's called OT IoT Security Report 2020. And that's going to be an amazing webinar from our security research team on some really cool findings that some guys have found in our company.
Yeah, in specific about webinar, Chris, I think it's going to be a very important, as you know, in Nozomi, we work hard to also adding our intelligence, mm-hmm. In what the solution is providing. So, and of course we saw and we identified and we share with the community a lot of our finding. And I think in this report, in this webinar, we would like to actually share and putting together, connecting the dots or some of the stuff that we saw in the last months, and then basically providing, to the community and to who is going to listen us, providing a sort of a guidance about what's happened and some of the main challenge that we identified in the last few months. So it's going to be very, very interesting. And 6th of August is also the last day of Black Hat, that unfortunately this year is going to be virtual. Yep. But for everyone who is part of the cybersecurity world, they will probably be part of the virtual Black Hat. Unfortunately, I will not meet many of you in person, as usually happen. But yes, so I think it's also also good as last day of the conference, adding also the possibility to listen some of the main finding that we identified during the last few months related to OT and IoT.
I'm kind of excited about this year's Black Hat. I don't know. I've only missed a couple since I started going in 1997, and this will be the first virtual one I've ever been to. So I think that's going to be cool. Awesome. Well,
thank you, Chris.
Thank you, everyone, and stay safe, stay secure, and we hope to see you out there soon. Bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.